You ready for this?
Let's find out.
We've sort of started.
I was going to say, I never know when we've actually started.
We kind of just start talking. It's like...
Yeah. All the world's a stage. And
there's so much on my mind.
Verbal diarrhea the second Skype turns on.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience.
I'm Joe from Low Resolution.
And I am Katie from Cinema Blend.
Hooray!
Hooray!
And I'll use my mad editing skills to put this at the beginning instead of the middle when we set it.
Crazy ninja editing skills.
So I was thinking, I was thinking about this podcast at the gym because Romeo and Juliet was on E, the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet, which I hadn't seen in so long. And it seemed like this would be the group of people to talk about that movie with. So I was just thinking about The Great Gatsby.
That's not going to get made.
Probably. No, it is. It is. Warner Brothers.
Oh, it is now.
Yeah.
I thought he was hedging. On
yeah,
whether or not
my theory was that he was doing that to like play hardball with some studio.
Is it DiCaprio? Who's he got?
Yeah, him and Tobey Maguire, Carey Mulligan.
He's this way, but anytime anybody casts DiCaprio on anything, it always seems like the most typical lazy casting. Like, not that DiCaprio's not a good actor, but he's always like the first person anybody thinks of.
Oh yeah,
and there's an actress who's like that too, and now I can't quite think of who it is. Although in the next 2 years, it'll be Portman. Years.
Yeah, the actress thing has like 2 year intervals.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been thinking about Meryl Streep in that way. Like the whole Margaret Thatcher themes.
Totally.
He's like, oh, of course, you got Meryl Streep playing Margaret
Anybody
Thatcher.
In that age range, yeah. Not that we don't love her.
I'm writing about the Memento special screening that's happening next week.
Which is?
They're screening Memento. They're bringing Memento is going to be in theater in 11 different theaters nationwide. Two of them,
like a 10th year anniversary thing?
Yeah, for the Blu-ray. The one in New York is at City Cinemas Village East.
Oh, that place is so tiny. You're talking about the really tiny one that has like the raised stage screen?
Yeah.
That's where I saw Roger Dodger. That was my first Jesse Eisenberg experience.
Oh.
Coming.
I guess that would have been most of people's.
Coming full circle to... Well, it would have been most people's if anybody had seen Roger Dodger.
Yeah, I did on your recommendation, actually. But you were the only person I knew who was talking about that. And I was just like, that movie sounds cool. I'm going to see it.
I have still not seen Roger Dodger. I owe myself a Jesse Eisenberg completist.
Worth a checkout. It's actually really good.
Could you imagine trying to do a retrospective of Jesse Eisenberg? He makes so many movies.
Well, and so many of his roles are so samey. Like...
It'd be like the Jesse Eisenberg show, like a TV series.
Yeah.
That's what it would feel like.
Yeah.
I would watch that TV series.
Last week on Jesse Eisenberg show, he fought zombies. This week, he builds a new website.
He looks a little awkward and shambling about it the whole way.
Right.
The Jesse Eisenberg show is on hiatus. We'll move on.
So you guys came up with some topics, right? That I kind of saw.
We did, because you may have noticed Nick is not here, but Joe, Katie, and I will carry on. So I thought we'd do questions from readers.
That's cool. Sure. That's a good idea.
So John has a really good question that I had totally forgot about, that the Indie Spirit Best Actress lineup is exactly the same as Oscars plus Greta Gerwig. And I had completely forgotten about that because that's not very normal, right?
No. So that is pretty cool.
So
yeah.
Do they try to skew indie or do they just give it to what is the Oscar player, which would be Natalie Portman?
I feel like the Spirits, just like the Oscars, have been getting less interesting in terms of who they hand out the award to. So I would figure they would give it to Portman just like everybody else is going to give it to Portman.
But on the other hand, Winter's Bone is, like, the big nominee there.
Well, that's true. I actually wouldn't be shocked if it was Jennifer Lawrence.
I mean, if somebody else won, I mean, obviously it's just the day before the Oscars, but will we see that as a sign of something? That, like, I mean, because I think everyone's kind of rooting for the Portman upset at this point, just to have something happen. So I wonder if we would see that and then read into it, maybe unnecessarily.
I kind of feel that about both actors categories now, where suddenly people are rooting for upsets. Whereas the actors, people seem totally okay with the way that's going.
Can supporting actors really be called an upset at this point?
Well, I mean, Melissa Leo's won everything.
That's true.
I mean, it would be an upset that people would see coming, whereas I think Portman losing would be one of the bigger shockers that I can remember.
But it does feel like
even though Benny has been you know, sort of stalking at number two for a long time, like, Benny's a strong contender.
Yeah.
Like, well, she just won the London Film Critics today, Benning.
Huh. She also won the New York Film Critics, and that didn't really get her anywhere.
I mean, if she wins BAFTA this weekend, I think that's probably a better indication than the Spirits. The Spirits tend to be the ones who are going to give out the second place Oscar finisher. They give to the Mickey Rourkes and the Bill Murrays. Mm-hmm.
Look at us totally slipping back into Oscar predicting.
I know, right? Come on.
We can't even stay away from it when we try.
I take some blame for that. I apologize.
The thing that's interesting about the BAFTAs, though, with the prediction factor, is that their categories are so different this year. Yeah, which is not normal for BAFTA lately.
Their acting categories are, particularly the actress categories.
Yeah.
Like
Melissa and Leo not even being there.
I would love it if Leslie Mangold won the BAFTA. I kind of think that that's maybe what's going to happen. It's going to be one of the ones who wasn't nominated because they don't have any of the fighter ladies.
No, Amy Adams is there.
Oh, is she? Oh, okay.
But no Hailee Steinfeld and no Melissa Leo. And no Jackie Weaver.
Yeah.
I don't think it was eligible.
Yeah, that's the other
thing. Was it not released in the UK?
I don't think so.
But I think the Best Actress field matching up so well with Oscar this year from The Spirits is, I feel like, indication or a natural progression from the fact that all those big, very anticipated indie movies, the ones from the very heralded directors with the heralded actresses, all really delivered at the end of the year. And that's kind of rare.
Yeah.
Where there's usually there one or two projects that everybody's really looking forward to and thinks is going to do really well, and they just turn out to not be very good. There are a lot fewer sort of out of left field choices, which, you know, those are kind of the fun of The Spirits in a way. So.
Although it's hard, like, what would be the indie that, like, you wanted to get recognized by Oscars and then was shoved out by everything in the Indie Spirits? Is there anything that got, like, left out by the Indie Spirits that, I mean, you know, all of the big ones are kind of mainstream contenders this year?
I think the disconnect really is Blue Valentine.
Yeah.
Right, because as Michelle Williams, it didn't really get anything.
Well, and it's so odd, and I remember it at the time because those nominations come out so early, the Independent Spirit. And, like, that's tailor-made for that type of award show, and then they ignored it.
Do you feel like if their nominations came out a month after they did, that you would have seen Blue Valentine and not, say, 127 Hours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm,
although it's hard to know because their nominations are juried, right? It's just the voting that's open to the members,
right? Which is, again, one of the things I really like about it is because there does always seem to be, you know, excuse the pun, an independent streak in the way that, like, even among indies, they really do seem to make statements and purposefully go for pointedly obscure choices in a lot of ways, which is
or
good.
They used to
or pointedly not obscure is the other thing. Like, I think the fact that they went for something like Black Swan is just like, we know everybody's heard about this thing. It's, you know, getting huge studio backing in terms of marketing and that kind of stuff.
Well, but when when the Indie Spirits went out, I feel like we weren't really sure that Black Swan was going to be the kind of hit that it was.
Well,
I mean,
that was
obviously
one of the early indicators, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a Searchlight movie, but I remember there was this long period where people had seen Black Swan at Toronto and Telluride and were like, well, but nobody's going to see it.
Right.
And then it became this huge hit, you know, which is really, I think it's easy to forget how incredible that is.
I know, I keep going back to that. I think it's just, in terms of a success story, in terms of a financial success story, I feel like that's one of the great narratives of 2010. Being that all these, and I think you mentioned this on the blog recently, Nathaniel, right? About how much money these Best Picture nominees brought in without feeling like they were pandering to movies that made money.
Yeah, because there were most of them were movies that people worried would not catch on because they, you know, weren't
right.
compromised in some way.
Right. And even with questions of scale, like, for a movie like The Kids Are All Right, did really well. for a movie like Winter's Bone. You know, Winter's Bone did really well.
Yeah, it's a and the fact that they all made so much money and they're all really good, and there's not that many like huge glaring things, like huge glaring critical hits that got left out. I mean, you know, you could make it, you know, you could say foreign films or documentaries or something, but really they. What the critics liked and what made money and what the Oscars are nominating are really matching up in this amazing way, which it makes me really happy.
Nothing felt like I liked District 9. I thought that was a good movie, but it getting nominated last year felt like they needed to add a blockbuster to the slate.
Whereas and they didn't want to do Star Trek.
Right, exactly.
Do you feel that way about Inception?
Don't, because I feel like Inception has a it's got blockbuster momentum, but I feel like it's got the kind of blockbuster momentum that would have put it in at least the conversation for Best Picture.
Yeah, I still really like Inception. I'm still really glad that it's
I do too, actually, I have to say.
It's, and also,
as the years have gone on, it's really stuck out in my mind beyond just the hype around it. Like, the actual film itself has really stuck with me.
Oh, see, I'm the opposite.
Right, yeah.
I tried to watch it a second time recently, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It was a one-timer for me.
But you don't resent its place in the top 10, huh?
No, no, because I think I was discussing this with Nick on a article that we're writing in tandem.
Uh-huh.
And, like, we were talking about which is our least favorite of the lineup, right?
Yeah.
And I said, well, mine is actually Inception.
Yeah.
But if I had to trade one out, it would be The King's Speech. I think it's a very good, like, traditional Oscar bait movie.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, the other movies have real, like, risk-taking. Even Inception, which I think a lot of it doesn't pay off. That is obviously the work of, like, a visionary person, even though I have issues with his vision. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm totally happy that it's in there, because I think Hollywood needs more people like that and more faith in people like that.
Right.
Although it would be even cooler if he weren't so financially successful and people still recognize that they needed him, you know?
Yeah. But you don't think we need more Tom Hoopers?
No, I mean, I don't have anything against him. I just feel like there's so many people who are pretty good with actors and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think I would probably answer that question with split answers too, in terms of least favorite versus the one I would take out of the race.
And what would your answer be then?
Because I feel like my least favorite, I mean, broken record, whatever, my least favorite really is The Social Network. Like, I'm not trying to posture.
You're not with, front.
I'm not from, but I feel like I wouldn't replace that in the race. I would probably take out something like 127 Hours, which I don't think is a bad movie, but I feel like it's flawed in enough ways that I don't feel like it should be held up to any kind of standard. Where I feel like, I think the ambition in The Social Network is a good one, and I think the filmmaking itself, I can recognize the craft as being really strong. I think for me it just falls apart at a story level for me so much that I really did not enjoy myself. So
this is a really interesting question.
What about you, Katie, then?
I don't know. I like so many of the Best Picture nominees. This is really weird.
I do too, but like, if you, because I had to look at my grades and none of them were below a B-.
I think my least favorite of them is The Fighter. And I know you guys are all really big fans of The Fighter, and for me it felt It felt like it worked, but it could have worked a lot better. And Mark Wahlberg kind of sank the whole thing for me. I really wasn't a big fan of him. But I think that the arguments you guys have been making for Russell as a director kind of puts that in there for me. And maybe I would take out The King's Speech. I really liked The King's Speech. You know what? No, I take out Toy Story 3. That is my choice. I like Toy Story 3. I didn't love it. I think it's kind of middle of the road Pixar.
I kind of can't disagree with you, actually.
Yeah, it's like, it's as good as Toy Story and Toy Story 2, which is great. You know, that makes it a really good movie, but it's not Up, and it's not WALL-E, and, you know, these
it
really
has
amazing...
It a really great ending that I was put up against a fairly typical first two-thirds.
Like, the first two-thirds that Pixar can do very well, and we have seen them do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets you to that great ending, but also the two movies that came before it get you that ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would vote, if I had a vote in Best Animated, I would vote for How to Train Your Dragon. But, I mean, I'm sort of the cold water on Pixar a lot of the time, too. I realize I have where
you monster.
I know.
How can you go to sleep at night?
I'm a bad internet movie fan.
No, I've been I think I had a Pixar movie as like my number one or my number two for several years running. And then Toy Story 3, when like everyone else went crazy for it, I was just like, I think I felt what everyone else had been like. You're like, you just judge them on a curve and you love everything Pixar does.
Doesn't it make you feel crazy though when you're like, speaking of, and it's just like, stop it? Everybody's making me feel stupid. I don't know what's going
on. The Social Network, that's a really tough position to be in.
This is a lonely branch out here.
So. But you are ever stalwart, like a Texas Ranger.
Thank you.
Well, you know what? I was just thinking these double standards are so funny that you were just talking about, Katie, because I have that with Toy Story, but kind of in the opposite way. Like, I like to think about impossible scenarios, right? And so I was thinking about, what if The King's Speech and The Social Network split the Best Picture vote? And I'm like, what would I love to be the surprise? And I realized that even though it's not even in my top 10 list, I started thinking about how cool it would really be if Toy Story 3 won.
That would be so cool.
That would be a very cool moment. I do agree.
Because of what I was talking about on the last podcast, where it's like the narrative of Pixar and how that movie is sort of all-encompassing of it.
It is. The final chapter of whatever phase of Pixar, these last, whatever, 15
But that
years.
Would that would like basically guarantee that whatever comes next is going to be worse. Which
well, Cars 2.
But it is going to be.
I know. Oh, God.
This is the perfect time. This is the perfect time for, like I said, that phase one narrative of Pixar to close
out. Don't you just wish the Oscars worked that way? Like, this is the best story. Do it. I mean, I guess
it does work that way, though.
Yeah, that's true.
But I feel like sometimes we tend to take that a little too far, and I'm as guilty as anybody. We sort of read purpose into the Academy as a monolith.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that when I was looking at the BAFTA nominees, because they're so similar to the Oscar nominees that came out. I don't know what the time difference was in between when those nominations were announced, like a week. And we talk about, you know, these precursors that try to be predictive of Oscar. And it's like, okay, but they can't really feel like they're filling out their ballot, feeling like they have a handle on who's going to be the fifth best costume nominee. They're not like us. They're not crazy people like we are, who are like sketching these things out and making predictions. So I feel like there is just some level of, as the sample size gets bigger, the choices do tend to narrow. Well, maybe this is the best way to decide what is, for a large group of people, the best or at least most favorite.
That's true, but I think people aren't really honest about how much they let other people's opinions affect them.
They start with a limited pool of possibilities because of things like that, because of precursors, advertising. I think that is definitely true. They only start with, say, a pool of 15 to 20 movies that they even think about anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then they choose 5, or in some places 10 out of that. You know what?
But you can see that in the Critics Awards, too. I see it every year.
Yeah.
Like if... I mean, and people would never admit this, but like, take this year, for example, Kim Hyeja for Mother. She wins the LA, right?
Yeah.
And then suddenly didn't she get nominated Online Film Critics Society?
She got nominated by a couple other people after that.
Right, but would she have if LA hadn't put her above Natalie Portman and Annette Bening?
I don't know.
Because I really think...
that log rolling or that...
Yeah, I really think all of these things are so... Yeah, it's like starting the avalanche, you know?
Well, and it makes you look at those outlier, like, looking at this year's Oscar slate, and I started to talk about this last week a little bit, but just how this year, more so than a lot of years, it really feels like every category is at least 3 or 4 Best Picture nominees and maybe one outlier. And it really makes you think of, like, well, who did the campaigning for the costuming in I Am Love that showed up? Like... I don't know. I'm generally very positive for the top 10 best pictures,
uh-huh.
Probably more so than most. But I think the one area that I do kind of feel bummed by that is you look at the tech categories and it's just like, God, everything is 5 of the 10 top 10 movies.
Yeah. And that's why I think that's one of the major drawbacks of having 10. You're forced to see how few movies they're thinking about. Whereas when there were 5 Best Picture nominees, the technical categories would look like. You could look at all those different nominations and think, oh, I wonder how far away this was from
the time. You were free to imagine the negative space around them.
Yeah.
And even now, even the I Am Love's costume nomination, right? Even something like that, that makes me free to imagine that it was like number 11 and it was almost the surprise nominee.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Well, that's the great freedom of following these awards, is you can be sure as you want to be that something was whatever. The first thing left out was your favorite thing.
Right.
Totally.
I always dream of some like Freedom of Information Act that lets us see the ballots, and like The Dark Knight was like the number 11 movie from that year.
But I feel like that's what I love about the Oscars. This season's sort of the Sturm und Drang about Social Network and King's Speech, and everything got so dark there about a week and a half ago. And it was just like, maybe because I don't feel really super passionately about either of the two frontrunners, I sort of have this freedom that I wouldn't necessarily in like a Brokeback Mountain year. But I feel like this is what I love about it. There's this conversation about it, and that there's this, you know, that the Academy really does have their weird preferences. And, you know, you just got to sort of at some point throw up your hands and just be like, yep, they do. And joke about it and laugh about it. And I don't
and
know.
Celebrate
I feel
the
like
fact
if I took everything as seriously as some people are taking it this year, I don't know why I'd keep watching.
And also just the fact that, you know, we've been talking about this for months, but this is the time of year when people in the greater public, like, oh, the King's Speech versus the Social Network. Like, what's that all about?
Yes.
And, like, America is talking about these. You know, both of my parents individually went to see the King's Speech because they'd heard about it. And they, you know, and like that, that makes me really happy that this is what this time of year is. And you can always focus on that.
We're all talked out, but now it's time.
now it's everyone else's turn.
Yeah, because now I'm like, let's move on to summer 2011.
Totally. Right? Absolutely.
Speaking of, have you guys watched all those like Super Bowl movie trailers?
Yeah.
I watched the Super Bowl, so yes. I did watch all those.
I've never watched it.
I noticed you mentioned that. I'm not entirely surprised.
So you watched them all online after all the trailers?
I do, yeah.
So what did you do back when they weren't all online? Like, did you watch the Super Bowl then for movie trailers?
No.
Or did you just not bother?
I just, you know, saw them
waited
when I
for
saw
them to show up in front of your movie. That's another thing, like to imagine the way technology has changed us. Imagine the times where you had to wait to see a trailer actually before a movie for the first time.
Yeah.
So that's pointless nostalgia.
I have a question.
Sorry.
Because with Inception and Toy Story 3 and The Kids Are All Right and Animal Kingdom even, we had like a handful.
And Winter's Bone.
We had a whole handful of summer movies that got major Oscar nominations. Of those superhero and sci-fi extravaganza trailers that you got 30 seconds of, which one do you think is going to have the most Oscar nominations?
Super 8. Easy.
People are reacting to the Super 8 trailer. I do agree with that. I think that that's going to be nostalgia for like old school childlike wonder. Spielberg is going to come back in a big way. And
I honestly think there's like even Oscar obsessives like us, like E.T. was nominated for its Oscar. It didn't win. Like, I honestly feel like that it's crazy to be talking about this, but that will help the Super 8's Oscar campaign. I feel like
like 28 years ago, E.T. didn't win Best Picture.
I totally agree with Joe about the Spielberg nostalgia thing. I mean, I lost my mind for the Super 8.
It doesn't even feel like it's a J.J. Abrams movie now. Feel like it's a Steven Spielberg.
Oh, come on. It does the lens flare as soon as his name comes up.
Yeah, but Spielberg's name is the first one on there, I think. I think you see Spielberg's name before you see Abrams.
You do, which I think is a subliminal message to suddenly make everyone nostalgic.
Totally. And I'll tell you, the music sounds so John Williamsy. It's actually James Horner, but it sounds so... It's actually music from Cocoon.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Michael Giacchino is doing the score, but the music... I spent a morning hunting this down on the internet. I'm telling you, I got really obsessed
with it. It was funny watching everybody on Twitter on Monday morning just sort of like, undulating, freaking out. I think you and Chris Rosen were both sort of like back and
forth.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I just, that hit a nerve with me. I mean, I loved Star Trek, like loved yeah. Star Trek. And it makes me really excited that J.J. Abrams has another movie and that it looked really good.
I'm nervous about the story of it because I feel like the way they're keeping whatever it is, like, out of sight, and I suppose in one way it could read Jaws, but to me, it read a little bit Shyamalan in a way Ooh. That made me nervous, where I was just like, Ooh. Oh, is this going to, like, disappoint? I don't know. There was a streak of Signs in there that I saw where I was
I
just
thought
like,
that, oh. too, actually.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. Nobody else mentioned that.
Because I wasn't watching the Superboy, I also saw all of those trailers back-to-back.
Yeah.
So then all the sort of badness of some of them sort of leaked into the goodness of some
So you
of the
don't
other
think
ones.
Thor will be an Oscar nominee?
I will see Thor before I see Transformers Dark Side of the Moon or whatever
Jesus
that
Although
Christ.
Transformers could easily be an Oscar nominee.
Oh, it definitely will be.
It always is.
Sound effects editing. But did you notice there was that one part in the Transformers trailer? Because, of course, the big story in between movies was that Megan Fox got fired because Michael Bay couldn't take her lip. And so they had to find somebody to replace her. And there's that one frame.
That just makes me love her so much more.
Where it was that blonde, whatever blonde underwear.
Rosie Huntington Whiteley.
And there was that one frame in the trailer where it's just her and she's blonde and maybe she's in a bikini top and she's staring like directly into the camera with this really like slack jawed, like, duh face. Yeah, that's who Michael Bay got to replace Megan Fox. I don't even think she knows how to talk.
Yeah.
Probably better.
Somebody wouldn't give any lip.
Oh, Lord.
What about the X-Men First Class?
Oh, yeah, that hit today.
Listen to me very carefully, my friend. Killing will not bring you peace.
Peace was never an option.
Yeah.
I think it was great, I have to say. I mean, I'm sort of going, like, this is where I just accept something fully and don't question it, but I'm super into it.
I can't look at it beyond my massive crush on Michael Fassbender right now. Well, I can't really see
you
anything.
Have the internet.
I half expect, like, the screening, like, people to throw panties at the screen.
Well, like, what do straight boys get out of that? Like, I guess there's, like, action in it. I don't know. That
but
whole thing was
all about though. X-Men has never been for straight boys, though. It's a thing. And they see it, but I feel like there's really, like, it's in a not-so-secret way, it's not for them.
When Bryan Singer was behind it, that became text.
Well, yes. I mean, it's in the comic books, too, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, just in terms of, you know, the comic book movies being so, you know, straight dude-oriented, and those movies are so much more interesting than that.
My only problem with X-Men is, like, I always think that the helmet is so dumb. And so, like, they have the shot of him holding the helmet or whatever.
The Magneto helmet?
Yeah, and the Magneto helmet. And when it's not on him, it looks really cool. And then...
Yeah, try undressing Michael Fassbender with your eyes when he's wearing that stupid looking.
It's like one of those things.
I can do it.
I think maybe you guys will be up to that talent.
Well, it's like one of those things that looks good on the rack, but then you put it on, you're like, oh, honey, no.
Speaking of boner killers, though, what about that Captain America trailer where I was super into it, and then all of a sudden it's like weird Benjamin Button, Chris Evans, pre-beefing up? That thing freaked me out in a not good way.
Well, don't you think that was kind of like their money shot that they already used in the trailer?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of
the point. The beefed up or the weird...
The exact transition.
The sickly one looks so much like a golem to me that I'm just like, oh, no. Like, I'm trying to, you know, have lustful thoughts about Chris Evans here. Like, stop... Stop doing that to me, man.
I think maybe it was outtakes from Benjamin Button.
Maybe. Fincher was feeling generous.
Because you know there's so much footage they didn't use.
What did you guys think of Cowboys and Aliens? I feel like I'm still not...
Oh, it's going to be bad.
Really? Oh, I'm ready. I'm excited about it.
I feel like the Harrison Ford cameo there was just all I needed to just be like... Because Harrison Ford, to me, at this point, whatever you throw in front of him, he'll just be like, okay, like, yep.
Yeah, it's unclear why he shows up still, because he clearly doesn't need the money. Like, what does he get out of acting anymore? Yeah.
Time away from Callista Flockhart.
Wow, that was intensely bitchy for really no reason. That was something else. I like that.
That was.
I just feel like I'm not in the target market of that so much that it passes me by.
I really liked the first Iron Man. Iron Man 2 obviously was a mess. I love Elf. I have this kind of innate faith in Jon Favreau to like when he's. Because Iron Man 2, I don't think was entirely his fault. That seemed to have been taken away from him in many ways.
Iron Man 2 is more dull and pointless than actively bad. So it's Favreau does have some chops, I will agree.
Yeah, and I feel like just cowboys and aliens, like, you know, it just sells itself.
I feel like it sells itself in a way that Snakes on a Plane felt like it sold itself.
Well, I think that's why people aren't excited about it yet. It's, like, not expanding beyond this, like, specific audience who reads my website, and that's been the mystifying thing.
Yeah. Having, you know, you guys are talking about E.T. and people having nostalgia for that.
Yeah.
I will admit that even though I think that looks terrible, I sort of would really love Harrison Ford to have one more big success.
Sure. I was kind of hoping
because, like,
before...
I know people are down on him and everything, but come on, he gave us so much enjoyment for so long.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Do you think he has it in it, though? I mean, he was a cranky old man when he was Indiana Jones. You know, he was...
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, sometimes I think about the 80s with him, and I just think, man, hey, like, people, like, he was just given love on screen, you know?
He was there for us.
He was. But I really liked Morning Glory, so don't count it out. Yeah, I took my family to see it over Thanksgiving, and they all really liked it, so give it a chance.
I do love Rachel.
Well,
where's her Oscar?
She's going to have to make things beyond Morning Glory if she wants
She's got to make some better career choices first.
She is one of those actors you want to sit down. It's her and Reese Witherspoon. I just want to sit them down and just be like, think about your choices, ladies.
Well, Reese Witherspoon had like the world at her feet and then just something happened.
And she's so smart is the other thing. She does. She reads so smart and she reads so business-minded. That's what I love about her is she's so like, she's on point. And
yeah.
I really think it's about getting the Oscar.
I walked into a honky-tonky just the other day. I dropped a nickel in a jukebox just to hear it play. I didn't have no tune in mind and didn't wait to choose. I just dropped a nickel in the sun and I played the jukebox blues.
Yeah, but she's done that now, though.
No, but I think that's the problem.
She got the Oscar and then didn't know what to do with herself.
I mean, it's the same thing with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
It's like that's the peak thing that you can get in Hollywood. And so if you're already financially spectacularly successful like Reese Witherspoon is, and then you win the Oscar and you're only, what, 30?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what do you do then?
But I feel like it didn't take away her taste level. Like, I still feel like she should be picking better projects.
Although she made a James L. Brooks movie, you know, like that's...
Well, that's true, but Water for Elephants looks like it's, like, has Razzie written all over it.
Wait, have either of you read the book,
Water for Elephants? I've read the book.
Like, I think we talked about this, Nathaniel, about how, like, it looks like it's just going directly scene by scene from the book.
Which is so sad, because it could be so cinematic.
I know, but, like, I don't understand why they're keeping the frame story at all, because that is such, like, a hokey, overly, like, mawkish
part. Scenes of Hal Holbrook.
Of Hal Holbrook, yes.
Sad and stricken.
Yeah, I know. Like we
because
don't need
the actual story and the milieu with the circus, that could be really cinematic.
Exactly, and like
I almost want to go through that trailer frame by frame and just point out everything that makes me grossed out by that. Like,
and do you mean all of Robert Pattinson scenes?
I actually don't mind Robert Pattinson. Like, I don't think he's great, but I'm not repelled by him in the way that I just feel like. I think part of it is that the fact that you're pairing him with Reese Witherspoon, it makes Reese Witherspoon look old, and she's not. Like, stop that.
Well, she's supposed to be older than him. She's supposed to be the older woman, yeah.
I just don't want to think of her that way. Like,
I know. Well, she's what? She's 33? How old is she?
Yeah, early 30s still, I think.
Yeah, and
or
I mean,
maybe
he's, mid-30s. And he's like 22. You know, that's a substantial...
It also seems like there's a big handful of projects this year, and I wrote about this a little bit on my blog, where, like, they're all sort of circus movies, or, like, I don't know. There just seems like a whole bunch of movies weirdly forced, fanciful tone. Like the Scorsese movie feels like that way, and Water for Elephants feels like that way, and the whatever the Spielberg movie is, that's the War Horse. Oh, I don't know. It has this like ephemeral, I don't know, French clown vibe.
I need to watch more of these trailers, I guess.
There's not a trailer for War Horse, is there?
No. I'm just talking about even just like synopsis. Mm. It all feels.
When the Oscars are over, we should definitely have a 2011 Oscar preview.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm so dreading that Thatcher movie. I'm so like.
I know.
It was directed by the Mamma Mia director.
No, that's what I said on Twitter, Katie. I don't know if you saw, but I was like, hopefully she, on Mamma Mia, she learned what a camera is.
I didn't see
that. And am I the only one who feels like that Meryl Streep doing a burlesque version of Margaret Thatcher? Just like, it's just.
It looks like Meryl Streep in a Margaret Thatcher wig.
It looks like a joke to me. I don't know.
As much as I resent her taking the August Osage County part away from more unexpected, this thing is going to book more.
I know. I feel like I'm worried that it's going to start a Streep backlash, because I feel like I can personally properly compartmentalize my frustration with the casting of Meryl Streep versus my love for her, but I feel like the public doesn't get those nuances. The public will do something like turn on
the unwashed masses.
Well, whatever. Yeah, it does make me sound arrogant. Whatever. But it's like, it's the same people who turned on Kate Winslet for winning an Oscar and being happy about it are the same people who are going to turn on Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
It was fun to talk about not Oscars for a while.
I know, right?
Well, you know, I'm always writing about superhero trailers, so you can always bring me in for that.
At Cinema Blend, I hear.
That is where I write about superhero trailers, and sometimes other things, but sometimes I feel like it's only superhero trailers.
Well, this time of year, it's only superhero trailers.
I know.
We didn't even get into how bad I think Thor is going to be.
Yeah, I think everybody's on that same page.
Natalie Portman made some weird choices, and they're all coming out at the same time. And what a strange, like, you know, series of projects to come out after one another.
It just seems like she's in I had to turn down a lot of roles while I was in school, or maybe being really choosy, and I feel like now she's in a not choosy phase,
but then now she's in a I'm having a baby, I won't gonna work for a year phase.
Well,
it's like, it's very strange.
Yeah.
Well, you can find me writing about whatever the damn well I feel like at lowresolution.blogspot.com.
And I'm Nathaniel, so thanks to Joe and Katie.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.